Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to a 58 Ember production.
Hey, welcome to Here For It. I'm your host, Erica Muller. Each week, we'll be talking all things life, fashion and beauty, personal development, and probably some pop culture along the way as well. Here For It is your weekly space to get grounded, regroup, and be inspired to live your best life, because really, we're all figuring it out as we go. And I'm so here for it. Hi guys, welcome back to Here For It. My name is Erica Muller. For anyone new around here, welcome. I'm so happy to have you. And I'm so happy to bring this episode to you this week. I have Dr. Julie Frantoni on the podcast, and we are talking all things brain health. If you guys have been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that I am sort of a nerd when it comes to learning about the brain and how it works and how thoughts happen and thought patterns, and just anything brain related is honestly fascinating to me. And so I'm really excited to have an expert on who, you know, really dove deep into our conversation and gave really great explanations and answers and information to things about the brain that I had truly never considered. I don't know about you, but I didn't grow up with anybody really talking about brain health as being something that's important or should even be considered. Really, the only thing that I remember is hearing like, oh, you should do crossword puzzles because they help prevent Alzheimer's. But beyond that, like, I don't ever remember learning about the brain in school. It just seems to kind of be overlooked. And so maybe that's why as an adult, I'm so interested in learning about it. But anyways, Dr. Frantoni has her PhD in cognitive neuroscience. She is a licensed speech language pathologist. She is board certified in biofeedback, which we didn't touch on in this episode, but I've done biofeedback before and I find it to be pretty incredible. And she's also a 200-hour certified yoga instructor trained in breathing and mindful techniques. Basically, if there's anything you want to know about the brain, she's your girl. And I'm really grateful to her for coming on the podcast, but also for the way in which she delivers information. Obviously, I do not have a PhD. Much of this stuff related to brain and the terminology and the language and the science around it is way over my head, but she is really amazing at making this information digestible. I left our conversation having a completely new understanding of brain health and things that affect our brain and how they affect our brain and why they affect our brain, things that I truly had never really considered before. And I just found this episode to be honestly fascinating. I've been thinking about it ever since we spoke last week, and I just think it's really fun and informative. Also, she mentions in this episode the Brain Health Index, which is, it's not a test, but it's sort of like a test to help you figure out where you are at within your brain. And so if you're curious or interested in doing that, it's linked in the show notes. As always, anything that is relevant or a resource to you in relation to an episode is always going to be linked in a show note. So that's always there for you. And also, a couple weeks ago in a Here For You episode, somebody had written in and asked my opinion on Botox. And I didn't really have an answer because I've never done Botox. I'm also not really educated in Botox or things like that. But at the end of this episode, we talk about Botox and the correlation and things it may affect in your brain, which I found to be absolutely fascinating to hear and learn about. So if that is of interest to you, it's towards the end of this episode. But I could honestly sit here and ramble on about brains and brain health and all the cool things, or at least I think they're really cool, forever, but I will spare you, and let's just dive into this episode. Brain health is something that I feel like tends to get overlooked. I think there's, you know, so many parts of our life and our health that we're told to focus on. And for whatever reason, it kind of seems like brain health has taken a backseat where we just don't hear about it as often. And I know one of the things you talk about a lot is brain span and increasing your brain span. Can you talk about what that means and why this is essential?
Absolutely. I think one of the reasons that we don't think about our brain as much, or, you know, we have plans for physical fitness, for nutrition, for finance, for, you know, different aspects of health. But our brain, we can't see it. So it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. It's also harder to measure or kind of track something without having metrics or really the ability, having visibility on it. So I think that's one reason why it's easy to sort of overlook it. And I think another reason is that for a long time, the message that was put out there was that you're born with what you've got, or you're, you know, that's as good as it's going to be. And that you're kind of, you know, once you're an adult, your brain is fixed and it's set and it's not going to change. And so now we know that couldn't be further from the truth. And now that we're starting to become aware of that, there's a lot more, attention on creating products and things around helping people with brain health. But yeah, another thing is that we as humans have made a lot of advances in medicine and technology. And so over the last just 100 years, we have doubled the human lifespan. So, you know, we're in just 100 years, people are going from living on average 40 to 80. But that's the physical body, right? So our lifespan has doubled, but what I call the brain span has not, meaning that our brains are not keeping up with our bodies, or they're not continuing to be as healthy as our bodies live longer. And so something that's really important for people to understand is that we have to take a different approach to the way that we're living day to day to be able to lengthen our brain span, so that our peak brain years are not just in our 20s and 30s, but rather if we're living to be 80 and you've got 50 more years, you know, you're going to need your brain and want it to be functioning at its best capacity. So yeah, I think it's something that we're having to shift, because we're sort of taking for granted that, oh yeah, like everything's just going to keep working. But it doesn't. You really have to be intentional and take care of it.
Yeah. What does it mean to be at like peak brain health?
Yeah, I think it means a little something different for everybody. Okay. But generally just that you are able to thrive within your life context. And so, because that is unique to each person, you know, the responsibilities you have, the passions and interests, your sense of purpose, you know, your day-to-day, all those things are very individual and unique. And so being able to operate well in that, in those capacities is widely different. But I will say, you know, having clarity of thought, being able to, you know, think clearly and problem solve and be creative and think flexibly, you know, being emotionally balanced, being able to, you know, regulate emotions, have a healthy way to process stress, and then having strong, you know, relationships, connecting to your sense of purpose, connecting to other people. So there's a lot of different facets, I guess, that make that up, that contribute to brain health. It's not just any one single thing. It's really a lot of little things and kind of that build a brain healthy lifestyle.
Is there a way to measure brain health? Like, how do we know if we have a healthy brain?
Yeah. So that's something that, in my work at the Center for Brain Health, we are really interested in figuring that out. And so we've developed a measure called the Brain Health Index. So it's a set of assessments that you take online, but essentially it gives you an overall brain health index score. And the idea is, this is not like an IQ test. This is not something that is going to put you in a box or say that you're good or bad or compare you to the rest of the population. This is really just you against you, similar to if you use any other tracking mechanisms like an Oura ring or even, you know, know, your Apple Watch, it's just kind of like helping you track, like, how am I doing today? And so the index is designed to be taken every 6 months or at minimum annually, kind of like you get an annual physical for your body, right? But to have these metrics to see just sort of where am I at, and to understand that this is not, it's not diagnostic. It's not looking for, you know, to detect something wrong, but really just identifying potential so that you could see, okay, here, I understand, just have a read on kind of what's going on. So that's kind of one objective way that, you know, researchers are trying to develop a method for people to have, to be able to look at and kind of have their own little dashboard to see those numbers. But I think the other way is kind of like, you know, I think that there are, like, mental health is a big way to kind of have your pulse on that. Like, I think if mental health is suffering, then probably brain health is not at its peak. Like, mm-hmm. I think knowing, like, I'm, you know, unhappy in my job, or I'm not satisfied in, you know, kind of, I don't have healthy relationships, or I'm struggling with X, whatever, fill in the blank. So I think having a healthy brain doesn't mean, because it's impossible, right, for all those things to all be good all the time. There's constant balance and ebb and flow of life. But I think as you start to have insight and, you know, have tools that help you sort of begin to see, okay, here's these things I need to pay attention to, or like, okay, my sleep has been really poor lately. I haven't been getting 7 or 8 hours of sleep a night. Just kind of having these different things that you can be aware of for yourself to know, like, okay, yeah, I'm probably shouldn't make any really big decisions today, right? Because I'm running on less sleep, or I'm not going to be able to think as clearly. So I think it's something that it's such a great question. We're still trying to figure out the best way to do it, but I think we're making a lot of progress, and I think people really want to know. And so it'll be a really helpful tool.
I agree. Because when I was starting to look into brain health and what it means to have a healthy brain, I was like, I have no idea. Like, nobody's ever asked me about my brain, or like, I've never taken a test or anything like that. So I was like, how are people like checking this? Yeah.
I know. Isn't it crazy that, you know, our medical doctors go through med school, and, or like, if you go get just an annual physical, they don't do anything for your brain. They might screen you for depression, but it's like your brain does so much more than just depression, right? Or if you're older and concerned about your brain health, they will screen you for Alzheimer's. But it's like, you have to be so far down the line to even for an Alzheimer's screener to detect something, that it's at that point, I don't want to say too late, but at that point, it's like you already have progressed in that direction, rather than saying, I was talking to a friend the other day who, she just had her baby, but she was pregnant. She was talking about her prenatal care. And she was like, it's the first time that my doctor has ever been like, well, what are you doing about exercise? What are you doing about what you're eating? What are you doing? Like, all these, because they're so proactive. Like, when you're pregnancy, for some reason, they're trying to set up the best case scenario to support the life of this child. Right. And so it's wild that, like, okay, if that's to support growing a life, then, like, just for yourself, like, yeah, not having a baby, but just like the way you exercise and what you eat and how much you sleep and you're managing your stress matters just to keep you healthy, let alone, you know. So it's just interesting that they are really interested in minimizing risks around pregnancy and childbirth, but that is sort of lost on kind of just general health practitioners. And that's sort of the healthcare system, right? It's really not designed to promote wellness. It's designed to just treat symptoms and illness. So it's like you go when you're sick, rather than, I've heard in different countries that doctors get paid as long as you stay healthy, they get paid. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, it's like you pay them when you're sick. And so anyway, there's different systems incentivize different things. So I would really, and we're starting to see a shift, I think, in these systems of, you know, people wanting to get to the root cause rather than just slap a Band-Aid on it with medication or treating the symptoms, but really look, seeking out more functional medicine, more more holistic healing, things like acupuncture, things that, that are not covered by insurance. So they're really expensive, but there's such a demand for that. And there's such a need for it. And I can't tell you how many stories, myself included, of struggling to either find answers for something or really feel like I was solving a health issue, until I did seek out some of these alternative methods. Mm-hmm. And they were really effective and better for you overall. It didn't, like, it's like, when you take one medication, then you've got side effects, and then you've got to treat those side effects, and then you've got, and it's just like, it's not actually ever getting at the problem. It's just sort of numbing it or postponing or delaying it or making it worse. So that's my little soapbox for, healthcare and sick care. And it's really not healthcare, it's sick care. Yeah.
No, it's so interesting. And I mean, I feel like I've had to be my own advocate before, where it's like, you go to the doctor and like, they only ask certain things. And I'm like, wait, but what about this? What about that? And you really, but I'm not a doctor. So it's like the fact that I had to do research on all these things is incredibly frustrating, because I don't even know if I'm like talking about the right things. And so, yeah.
Yes, you do have to be your own advocate for everything, for your education, for your job, but yeah, especially for your health. Yeah, really doing your own research, I think, is something that, and kind of like you said, it's interesting, this paradigm where we're like, well, you're the expert, and so I trust you, and yeah, I'm going to, you know, follow your guidance. Something else I was thinking about yesterday was just this idea that I think a lot of people do have this mentality that another person, like a doctor or a system, is going to keep you healthy, when really mm-hmm. it's like, the thing that's going to keep you healthy is you. You are going to be your advocate. You are the one that knows your own body best. Like, you can tell if something is off or working, or if, you know, you don't feel right about it. And so I think kind of taking that responsibility and that ownership and autonomy back can be really empowering for people to understand that, like, your health isn't someone else's responsibility. Like, it's yours. And so really knowing that, yeah, you know, doctors have gone through a lot of education, and you definitely want to take into consideration their recommendations, but you get to, you know, assess that with your own critical thinking, and you get to kind of, I'm not suggesting, I know it's a, it's a deep, dark hole of like WebMD and like, you know, things find or like TikTok, whatever, but like, so, you know, like with reputable sources and kind of like, you know, consulting different opinions is always healthy. Like going to sources that you know you can trust, but kind of pulling together and not just taking something at face value, but really doing that critical thinking is a really healthy brain exercise for us to be doing. But yeah, at the same time, it's like, yeah, you really have to understand that, like, I'm not just going to expect that someone else can do this for me.
Yeah. I also have been a big fan of the idea that, like, we're all just so individual that I just don't think a one size fits all approach works in any area of life. We all have different backgrounds, and our bodies are different, and our minds are different. And so it seems challenging to put a system in place that's like, just group everybody into one.
Yeah, it is. It's hard. And I think, although, you know, the same kind of general principles of like, get outside, don't sit all day long, you know, like, there are some preventative things that are like somewhat universal, but then, yeah, in terms of, say, exercise, for example, the types of exercise you do can vary vastly yeah. based on, you know, your interests and what you enjoy. Same with nutrition. That is another one that's really individual, but I think there are some general things that, yeah, everyone could at least be pushed to like some form of physical activity for 30 minutes a day, you know, kind of just like these basics that I feel like could be encouraged a little bit more.
Totally. And I feel, I don't know school systems today, because I've been out of it, but like, that wasn't anything I was ever taught growing up. Like, back in middle school, I remember we did have like a home ec class, but we were making brownies in the microwave. Like, we weren't learning anything that was like actually healthy or like anything like that. So you have to take the power back, but it's like also exhausting to be like, I don't even know where to start, because nobody's even given me a starting place.
Right. That's one thing. I mean, especially with the brain. And I love hearing now about kids in school learning mindfulness or learning some emotion regulation strategies. I mean, man, what that is going to be,
what a gift. A
difference. So I love hearing that. I hope that I would hope that there's more in terms of just nutrition or these other lifestyle factors that we now know so much more about that hopefully can be infused. But I mean, you'd be shocked, even like thinking about, I worked in a hospital briefly, and like the hospital food, like, I'm like, this is like where people are sick and they really need good nutrients. And it's like, they're having to, you know, cost effectively mass produce food. So like, they're getting, things are canned, things are frozen, things are, you know, bulk bought from whatever supplier. And it's like, when you buy things in bulk, like it's just, you know what I mean? It's really hard to do that well, to make things like from scratch, or, you know, choosing organic, or choosing everything, getting things that are in season or local, or kind of basing things around that. It's like, it's all just around, you know, what's the cheapest thing you can get that can feed the most people. And not saying that that was the strategy of the hospital I was at, but I think just in general, places that have to, and even schools too, right? Like, we've seen cafeteria lunches. It's like the same thing. And it's like, oh my gosh, like, this is the fuel. These are the building blocks that break down into the amino acids that form your neurotransmitters, like dopamine and serotonin and norepinephrine, that help your brain function and body do everything that it needs to do. And so if you're not getting that basic fuel, man, it's going to be so hard to, you know, have the brain energy or mental energy to do all the things that you need to do, learning in school, especially, or if you're healing in a hospital, or just day to day wanting to kind of thrive and feel your best, to be able to show up and do the things you want to do that day. So it's like such an underrated aspect of, like, you know, food is not just something for taste and enjoyment, the way that a lot of, I guess, commercial products have made it to be about. Mm-hmm. You know, it definitely is an experience, but at the end of the day, like, that's your main energy source for your brain.
Yeah. Again, I think we're not given the connection between what you're eating is affecting your brain health.
Yes. And it's so cool to see the light bulb turn on, where I'll encourage people. I'll just be like, just notice how you feel. Like, this isn't about being on a diet. This truly, I don't even like to use the word diet. I don't think that there is one diet, one quote brain healthy diet. It's really figuring out what works for your body. And so just noticing, like, thinking about food as energy, and really thinking, like, how do I feel when I eat that? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are used to not feeling well. Like, they're just used to feeling fatigued and low energy and brain fog and just feeling like crap. So they can't tell the difference. It's like, oh, that's how I always feel. So eating this bag of Doritos is, like, you know what I mean? Just keeping me in that same place. Whereas it's like, man, if you were to just, like, feel what it feels like to feel good, and then feel what it feels like to introduce that to your system, then you can begin to notice. So it takes, some awareness, and it takes, and you have to want to, you have to be curious.
Yeah. Speaking of brain fog and focus, is that just directly correlated to the food you're eating, or are there other factors? Because I think a lot of people deal with that.
Yeah, there are a lot of other factors as well. Food is a big one though, just because, like I said, the food that you're breaking down is kind of, and there is this direct connection between your gut and your brain through your vagus nerve that's kind of helping signal those things. So yes, definitely. And if you have something like leaky gut or any GI issues, which I've dealt with a lot myself, could definitely lead to brain fog. And that was kind of how I figured out. I never did a test. Well, I have now, but earlier, like years ago, at work, they would serve these giant cookies. We would have these Friday lunch lectures, and these cookies were like the size of your head, right? And they were like, had like chunks of like Reese's in it. Like, they were like, oh, just really good. And so I would eat one, and then after lunch, like, I would literally be falling asleep at my desk. Like, I just like could not, like, and so I was like, yeah, I think, and it turns out, like, I have sensitivities to gluten and dairy. And it's just like, second I ate that, like, it was like no energy. My body was like, this is not helping you think clearly, or it's like I needed to take a nap. And so it felt awful. Where was I going with that? Oh, other things that contribute to brain fog. So yeah. So diet is definitely a big one. But interestingly, I mean, brain fog came up a lot, and the way that I sort of researched this was in relation to COVID and long COVID, because brain fog is one of kind of the lasting symptoms that a lot of people have been complaining about. And so it's interesting, because some of the things that they think it has to do with is kind of an overreaction of the system to inflammation. And so we know that there are certain foods. I don't want to label any foods as, you know, quote, inflammatory, like it's all of balance, but I will say, certain foods can maybe contribute to inflammation if you have food sensitivities or allergies, or if you have leaky gut, or, you know, kind of caveat that. But I will say, if there is excess inflammation in the body, then certain brain cells can become overactive, and that might be a cause of that. So I think, you know, also lack of sleep is another one. And what else would I say? And then I would say too, just information overload and not being kind of strategic with what you're letting in. Mm-hmm. We are bombarded by, you know, just scrolling on social, checking email. We have all this information at our fingertips constantly. And we are constantly moving from one thing to the next, right? We have this like 3-second attention span. And it's like, and so for people that feel like they run on, you know, back-to-back meetings, or they're continually just like off to the next thing, your brain, one, you're not present and fully paying attention to the things that you're doing or thinking about. And so they're not even fully getting encoded ever. So then you're kind of rushing off to the next thing. So that could be part of like, I'm having trouble with memory. It's like, okay, well, you're not fully giving yourself a chance to like soak it in. So yeah. Recommend taking pauses can really help with that. And there's one other thing. Oh, and then stress. Stress can be a really big contributor when we're in long periods of chronic stress. It increases cortisol, but it affects the hippocampus, which is the part of the brain that is responsible for learning and memory. And so if you ever recall going through a particularly stressful period in your life and you're like, I don't have a lot of memories from that, or like I'm having, or if you're in a stressful period and you're like, yeah, I'm having trouble managing like everything, it's because your hippocampus is being affected. And so it's not able to convert things then into longer term storage. So there's, yeah, a whole bunch of different angles around that. But lack of sleep, stress. And then of course, if you're stressed, then you may not be sleeping well. So then these things just sort of compound mm-hmm. on top of each other. But yeah, a lot of it again is kind of just this awareness of this lifestyle that our culture has promoted as so normal or even yeah. celebrated as like, I'm so busy and I'm hustling and grinding and never stopping and never sleeping. And it's like, well, that is not a long game. That's not going to increase your brain span. That is a short-term solution that, you know, maybe it worked for you in high school or college when you were cramming for a test or you needed to kind of like get something done. It was effective, but that is not a long-term effective strategy. If you want to have your brain functioning well, when you are, you know, in your 80s.
Yeah. That's fascinating. So then for people, because I think the majority of us are like, well, I have 6,000 things on my to-do list. I have to be here at this time, there the next time. None of these things are related. How on earth do we like, what do you recommend to help us slow down when our lifestyle maybe doesn't allow for it?
Yeah, I think that's the first thing is shifting from like, you know, this is what I have to do versus like understanding, like I get to decide. So I get to choose my day. I know that there's, you know, it's like, okay, it's like to the single mom that's like working 3 jobs, yeah. you know, there's like, there's a different spectrum here. So I'll just kind of speak more generally. But I will say that, you know, so maybe you can't choose what you have to do or if you're in a survival state, but you can choose how you do it. And so I think to know that like you can take, hopefully, no matter, it's hard for me to think of a job where you couldn't do this, but to be able to take a 3 to 5 minute break and very like a few times a day, you know, that's a really short doable thing that like you can build in rather than kind of letting your tank get on empty at the end of the day, but like short bursts to recharge. Mm-hmm. Those short breaks can also help your brain to again, consolidate what just happened before you transition between work and home or between one task to the next, one meeting to the next. So I think giving yourself that ability to recharge. And I think, yeah, and like taking back that autonomy of like, yeah, I can approach this in a frazzled, scattered, stressed out way, or I can approach this with a calm brain and kind of cultivate sort of this mindset of like, you know, I get to determine my experience of this. So it takes it takes discipline and practice. It's not something that like you can just switch on. And I think part of why that's hard for people is because, you know, the brain that you have is a brain that you've built based on how you use it every single day. So, you know, we know because of neuroplasticity, the brain has this incredible ability to change. But unfortunately, every day we're just locking in those same patterns because we're repeating them over and over again. So we're just strengthening those connections and those networks. And so to change them takes a lot of intentional work and effort, but it is absolutely possible. And it doesn't take as much as you would maybe think. So it's like for people that are listening that want to change, you absolutely can. And it's starting small, right? It is that take 5 minutes a day, 5 minutes in the morning, you know, or 5 minutes in the evening before you go to bed, or 5 minutes at lunch, or like it's 3 minutes, little bits, little breaks. And then I think approaching like really stepping back. And so I talked about how important a sense of purpose is. And I think really understanding within whatever it is that you're doing, if it's, I'm having my own podcast, if it's, I'm, you know, a student in school, if it's, you know, like whatever stage of life or season you're in, to understand like, what is my overarching goal or objective here? Like, why am I doing this? And then, okay, how is what I'm doing supporting that goal and making sure that those things are aligning? Because I think sometimes we feel like we have to do all the things and we're like spinning our wheels, but it's not actually pushing us forward. Mm-hmm. And so to really be able to take a step back and actually be strategic and assess, okay, what here are the things, what are the most important things? What are the critical things? What demands, you know, a lot of brain effort? And then how can I, when is my prime time? Kind of like for me, that's morning. So understanding like, when is my best time to do those things? And if you have the flexibility of your schedule to kind of move those things around. But even if you don't, I think just taking a step back and seeing really like, what is supporting my overall direction here, and knowing that, because I think a lot of what we do, we just feel like we have to, or we have to be at this thing, or we've got to do that. And it's like, you know, less is more. Like I would say quality over quantity, for sure. Like we talked about, that's different for every single person.
Yeah. So then during those like 3 to 5 minute breaks, what should we be doing? I'm assuming that's not the time to pick up your phone and scroll TikTok.
Yes. Great point. Brain breaks. Think about disconnecting from people and technology. So stepping away, being, and it's not necessarily zero thought, but zero effort. So just like letting your mind wander, daydreaming is great. Kind of just like, you know, letting your brain relax is kind of like, it's sort of like if you're, to make an analogy, if you're driving and you put it, like, you're like gripping the steering wheel and it's like putting on cruise control and like, just let it go. Like you don't have to like, you know, actively engage with it. And so that's very hard for a lot of people. But that can look a lot of different ways. That can simply be taking a walk down the hall to get a glass of water. It can be turning away from your computer and looking out the window. It could just be, I'm going to just stand up for a minute and like, you know, or I'm going to step outside and just look at the sky. Just kind of something where you're just able to really take it, not taking in any input.
Yeah. I love that. I have had this habit for a really long time and it trickles into other areas of my life, but it's like all of a sudden I'm hyper aware that there's so much stimulus around me that I'm like, I need silence. And so one of my favorite things to do is if I have a meeting somewhere, or if I'm like going to the grocery store, I get there and then I just like sit in the car with like no music, nothing, just for like 5 minutes. And I'm like, wow, I can like hear my actual thoughts.
Yes. We actually encourage people to, when they're driving, to have no radio, no music on, no podcast, not on the phone. And people hate it at first, but then they grow to love it. And so I love, like, when I got a new car a few years ago, and my car before that didn't have Bluetooth. And so then this new one did. And then it would like automatically start playing whatever was last on Spotify or whatever. And I have to actively turn this off. And it's like so easy to just like, it's on and you're like, okay. But yeah, I actively turn it off because I'm like, this is my time to just decompress and like let my brain just rest for a minute. And you're driving, which is still really an active thing. But, or if you're like just sitting in a parked car, that's great too, to just like totally enjoy.
Yeah. I love that. I definitely do that a lot too. And it's interesting because I have a lot of friends, I think to what you're speaking about, who are like, wait, you do that? They're like, I can't be alone with my thoughts. Like I listen to music while I'm in the shower, first thing while I'm making breakfast in the morning. And I'm just like, the thought of that gives me so much anxiety because I already just feel overstimulated by you telling me that that's what you do.
Yes. Well, I love that you intuitively just figured that out for yourself. Yeah. And I think for anyone that is like, I can't be alone with my thoughts, like my challenge to you is try it for just 2 minutes, you know, do it for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and work your way up to 5 minutes, and just see how you feel. And you may start to like it. You never know.
Yeah. So then when it comes to brain health, this feels to me related, but maybe they're not. Like, is brain health sort of the same as mindset work?
Hmm. So I would say mindset work is incorporated into brain health.
Okay.
I think that you definitely need a growth mindset, or there's certain mindsets that you can have that can help facilitate a healthy brain. But I would say brain health is like, you know, it's encompassing specifically the way that you're thinking, right? The way you're approaching things. But I guess in a broader sense, it's also kind of like those daily lifestyle things we talked about: sleep, nutrition, exercise, stress management, social. And then, but kind of this piece around how you actually use your brain to engage with the world and be strategic, or have a mindset is part of it, but it is a good one.
Do you have mindset practices that you encourage?
So in my own, just like personally, I think it's so healthy. There are just, some little swaps that are so, that it seem tiny, but are so effective, even just from like, of like, instead of calling it a to-do list, like this is my get to-do list, right? Mm-hmm. Like instead of I have to, I get to, and just like reframing with kind of a lens of gratitude. I think reframing is another way of supporting your mindset work, of from challenge to opportunity, or instead of thinking of something as a threat, as like a challenge in a good way, because challenges help us grow and are healthy. So those are some things like kind of as I approach my day that I can think about those. And then also like a mindset of like lately I've been practicing thinking about like rather than a mindset of scarcity or lack, or like I always feel like I don't have enough time, or like, you know, but like to one of more like abundance and gratitude, and like I have everything I need. And so that's also kind of taps into emotional regulation as well, which has been helpful. But I definitely recommend, I think for people when you're starting starting your day, setting the tone for your day, and especially really critically in the morning as you're waking up, like if you're wanting to create changes in your life, there is that period of time as you are transitioning from sleep to wake that your brain waves change. They fire at different, your neurons fire at different frequencies based on what you're doing. So they're firing more slowly when you're sleeping, and then they fire a lot more quickly when you're doing really active thinking and processing. And then there's kind of these stages in between of theta and alpha. And so when you're in more of those theta and alpha states, it's more, you're more able to kind of tap into that subconscious or maybe like limiting beliefs, or kind of rewrite them. And so that's why morning is a really good time to set your mindset, or, you know, set your intention for the day, or remind yourself of a truth, or saying like, hey, I'm going to make this shift, or simply, if you are starting your day with what do I need to do today? It's like, what do I get to do today? Right. Just those little shifts that can be super helpful. So that's a recommendation that I have found to be super effective in my life, that I think just taking, and doesn't take very long, just a few minutes to really like, as you're kind of even just like before your feet hit the floor and you get out of bed, but to just like be thinking about that, rather than whatever other autopilot script is going to go, can be really effective.
I love that. I got really into affirmations this year. I've heard about them forever, but nobody had ever really told me like, how do you use an affirmation to like help change your mindset? And so I was like, I think I'm just going to try and figure this out for myself. And I picked like 10 or 12 affirmations that I felt like were relevant to me. And I would just like repeat them like over and over and over and over again. But the interesting thing that I noticed that started happening is that the more that I did that while I was like in the shower or washing dishes or things like that, was in the morning when I woke up, instead of feeling anxious about the day, my brain was like going over my affirmations. It like became automatic.
Mm-hmm. That's so good.
And I love that, because I feel like that morning part is just like, oh, I feel like it actually like sunk in and did something in my brain.
Yeah. It takes so much repetition to, to rewire that. And so, but when it happens, it's like so exciting and it feels so good to be like, yeah, like these thoughts feel more rewarding and it actually feels better in my body to, you know, believe these positive things about myself and to, you know, create them and make them happen, rather than running on the cycle of anxious thoughts or what ifs, or kind of staying in that fear sympathetic state.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a minute ago about the brain you have is the brain that you build based on how you use it. and that you can rewire or change it. What are some ways that people can do that? Is that through things like affirmations or?
Yeah, there's such a variety of ways that you can change your brain. And truly to understand, our brain is, okay, so if you think about our DNA, do you remember when they were doing like the Human Genome Project?
Yeah.
And it was like this big exciting thing that they're like, we're going to map the human genome. And like, and then it was like over really quickly. Like it kind of like it ended, like it was like, oh, it's done.
Yeah. Like so, I have a very vague memory of it.
Yeah. Like it was kind of like this big deal. And then it was just like over. Cause they did it quickly because we actually have like a pea plant has more variations than humans do. And so the reason I bring this up is because plants have everything in their DNA to grow another plant. Like you don't, it doesn't require a mother plant or a family plant to like raise that plant, right? It just like has everything it needs to like grow and thrive and do what it needs to. Humans, our DNA is designed to be adaptable, which is a great gift. So the way that we learn is that like certain genes turn on and off based on our environment and how we're nurtured. And so our genes are not, it's not like we know this from like sadly neglect and abuse cases where like if kids are just left alone without any stimulation, like they don't develop language, they don't develop, you know, certain cognitive skills. Like they're just, that you can't just like a human cannot just like grow on its own, right? It requires a lot of interaction. And so I bring up that point because now I kind of lost my train of thought. The whole reason of going into that was just this idea that like, you know, we have, oh, the incredible adaptability of the brain, right? So it's designed to, based on whatever environment you're in, to kind of help you survive there or thrive. Okay, tell me your original question again. I'm sorry, I got off on a tangent.
About like ways to change our brain. Like if it's been functioning in one way because it's how we built it, to change it.
Okay. So, so those things have like kind of built the brain that you have. But because it is incredibly adaptable, we know that like everything, everything that you do affects it. So it's like nothing that like, there's not a single thing that you do that like doesn't feedback loop into your brain. Oh, this is the connection. Here we go. So it was, just kind of like, I like the analogy of like an algorithm, right? Like it's constantly updating and constantly changing based on what you feed it. And so that our brain is actually really vulnerable, I would say, to everything that you're feeding it. So people are like, you know, that's like listening to the news constantly. That's like having like whatever types of like, even just like violence or things on like in TV shows or like horror, or like what, like, I don't know, like some people love scary movies and I'm like, I can't watch that stuff. But like what you're reading, what you're listening to, the people you're hanging out with, what they're saying to you, like all of that goes in and feeds into the algorithm and then creates like, you know, shapes your actual brain and makes certain networks stronger or less strong. So I think one piece of advice I have is to like really take inventory of like, what are you taking in? Like, what are you consuming? And like, that's even energy included, like the people that you're around, that's, all forms of media. And so even if it means you need to like do a purge on your Instagram feed of like who's showing up in there and like let's follow only accounts that are like not going to make me feel comparison or the ones that are going to like, you know, things that I'm interested in. I don't know. So like curating your environment is huge. So I want to say like you could be doing the best work of like setting your affirmations and intentions in the morning and, you know, meditating and breath work and doing all these things. But like, if you're constantly bombarded by stuff, the things that you have control over, at least it's going to be really hard to create change. So I've heard the quote, like, it's really hard to heal in the environment that made you sick. So just thinking of like, you've got to change kind of a lot of things have to change, right, in order to support those shifts. So I think kind of like just doing a little analysis of like, what is in my life? What am I taking in? What am I exposing myself to that I don't necessarily need to? And then kind of removing the garbage inputs and then putting in the healthy inputs, whether that's like I said, like meditation, prayer, journaling, affirmations, gratitude, like kind of like taking in that, as well, and then supporting it. So that's more of like the the software that you download, right? The thoughts that you choose to run. And then the hardware being like things that are going to be supported by exercise and nutrition and like increasing brain blood flow and actually getting the nutrients you need and supporting kind of the hardware to function. And so they work together, and the better hardware, you know, the healthier your hardware is, the easier it is to download the software. And when you have that software, it motivates doing the things that help kind of keep the hardware healthy. So a lot of analogies there. But yeah, I think just it's on all fronts. So I hope that was clear.
Yes. That was a great explanation. Thank you. Yeah. Another way, and you can tell me if this is completely wrong, because I don't know a ton about brain health because it's not taught, but I'd heard, that you have something in your brain called myelin, and that's like where your thoughts, I'm totally going to butcher this, so don't judge me, but like you have myelin in your brain. And if you've been kind of like on autopilot with certain thoughts for a while, like those news stories or, you know, violence, whatever, and you want to shift them, it kind of like takes a second for those to disappear and go down a new path. And the myelin's created to help, like your brain is recognizing that, oh, we think these thoughts a lot. And so it creates like a fast track to that thought. Is that true?
Yeah, you're super close. So the myelin is the fat that wraps around the axon that conducts the electrical signal faster. Okay. And then the more, you know, they say like what fires together wires together. So the more often you that neuron fires, the more connections that it has to the other neurons around it, making it stronger. So it's not necessarily the myelin, it's like the dendrites are like the little kind of arm branches that come off the end of the neuron that connect, that send the signal to the next neuron. So it's just like, it increases the number of dendrite connections to the other neurons. Yeah. But definitely, so yeah, the more that they fired, they literally like have stronger increased connections, but then the less that you do that thing, like similar to like, if you learned a language in elementary school or, you know, like, and then you're like, I've forgotten, it's because you haven't used it. Like then those connections decrease and then you have less connections there. So then you kind of lose those skills, if you will. So that can happen in a positive sense of you're like, oh, I wanted to remember Spanish, or it could be in a good way of like, yeah, I wanted to forget that negative thought, or like, I don't want to think that negative thought anymore. I don't want to do that behavior or that pattern. You can literally rewire it.
So almost just from taking your attention off of the negative thought over time, that will just diminish it.
Yep.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah. And it's definitely hard. Like you can't just, you have to have a positive one almost to replace it so that there's something for it to do, that there is a pattern of fire. It's like fire this way instead of this way. And then as you neglect that one, then yes, it decreases.
Fascinating. It's kind of, it makes me think of like when you exercise and you're building up either your cardio or your muscle. And then if you stop exercising for 6 months, and then you get back into it, you're like, wait, it's not there anymore.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
A good analogy.
Okay. I want to shift gears quickly and just ask you about this, because I saw it on your Instagram and I've had a number of people ask me this, and I don't feel qualified to speak on it because I'm not an expert in any way, but you posted about Botox and the connection with a study that was done that talks about how we have receptors that are pulling Botox into our brain and paralyzing between nerves and muscle cells. I don't want to say, are people misleading people, but are we just not being given full information about things like Botox and other things that we are potentially doing?
Yeah, I think with this one, it's so interesting. Yeah, I feel like people like are so, like I said, trusting and eager to, like, if the person says it's safe, it's safe. Like if all these people do it, it must be safe. It's like, well, there's a lot of things that analogy breaks down with. I think that there is kind of how we talked about like being your own advocate, and it's like, you really have to do your own research. You have to understand, like, look at the case studies, you know, where this ended in paralysis, or there was like some things that went really wrong. Like it is a neurotoxin, like the biology and chemistry of how it works is like, it's a paralyzing agent. Like it's paralyzing a muscle. It was, you know, founded out of like they developed this for a method, like a weapon of warfare to like, you know, really cause a lot of destruction and basically like kill people using this in like massive amounts. So I do think that Botox, there are some medical applications for like, whether it's migraines or like I've heard of some different unique medical conditions where, you know, it has a place. But I just think there's some interesting, you know, because the body and the brain is such a giant feedback loop. So like the body is sensing something that sends that to the brain, you know, thinks something, it sends it to the body. And just even with like our facial expressions. So I thought this was really interesting, that, you know, one way that we recognize the emotions of other people is we like mirror them without kind of realizing it. Mm. And so these little micro expressions. And so a study found that the participants who had Botox, they were less able to read the expressions of others because they themselves like couldn't make those expressions as well. And so, which is interesting because it's like, of course, I don't know. It's like, I want to be able to, if someone's smiling or experiencing joy, like I want to feel that too. And like, when you smile, you know, the thing of like, if you're sad, but then it's like, if you smile, it'll like actually make you feel happier. Like yeah. It is true because it's those, the muscles are sending that signal to your brain of like, I'm happy. And so anyway, just the point that exactly what we were just talking about, that the brain is so malleable and it changes in response to everything, like everything you consume, everything like perfume, everything in our environment that you're breathing in or putting on your skin, is changing it. So just knowing like, no matter what you're doing, like I said, like everything is constantly changing and updating that algorithm, but, you know, I don't know that people realize the extent. They're just like, oh, it's just my face. It's just surface. It's just this muscle, but it's like, but it's all interconnected. So I think just for people to think more about that and to just understand that we don't have a really good, there's not really good studies on the long-term effects of it. So, you know, just proceed with caution.
Yeah. I'd read a similar study that, like what you were saying about reading people's facial expressions, but it was about mothers who had done Botox with babies and the babies couldn't understand what mothers were trying to communicate with them because they are so relying, like you were saying earlier about like, we need that external feedback to grow as a person. And that freaked me out where I was like, I would never like put a baby at risk based on, I don't know. It just made my brain kind of freak out of like, that's, I would have never thought that that could impact a child.
Interesting. Well, and yeah, cause for the beginning, the really early years of life, like your face to face, like the baby only sees your face cause you hold them and they rely so much on facial cues. I mean, I know in the beginning their vision is not that great, but as it develops, that's how they're learning about the world and, being able to connect and read others' emotions forms the basis for, you know, social skills and the ability to form healthy social connections. So I'll have to look that up. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. A note to end on. It's like a two-part. So are there things that you see people doing that are harming our brain health that maybe like we're just not aware of? And then what are something that if somebody's listening to this episode and they're like, oh my God, I want to like start being aware of this and helping my brain, what would you suggest that they do?
Yes. So I would say a lot of our habits in mainstream American culture are pretty toxic. I mean, like skipping sleep to stay up late, whether that's out drinking or you're just on your phone scrolling or you're binging Netflix. Those are some cultural norms that are extremely toxic to brain health. So just going to say it, not a popular opinion. And then in terms of like things that they can do, they can definitely check out the Brain Health Project is a research study that I'm working on. And it teaches brain healthy habits. So there's training on there. There's the Brain Health Index assessment that I mentioned. So they could go to the brainhealthproject.org and sign up that way. It is a research study. It's a 10-year research study. We're trying to learn about the human brain. So that's one thing if you want access to more strategies and tips, but I would say really like we touched on a lot of good ones throughout this, just around setting mindset and being aware of your environment, what you're taking in.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of this. This was amazing.
Thank you for having me. This was really fun.
Please let everybody know where they could find you and connect with you.
Sure. On Instagram, my handle is at Dr. Julie Frattantoni. My website is www.drjuliefrattantoni.com. I send out a monthly newsletter and just love spreading the word about brain health. So please, would love to connect with you.
Thank you so much.
This has been a 58 Ember production. For more shows, please visit the 58 Ember channel, 58ember.com, or find us at 58 Ember Media on socials.